Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your favorite podcast app is. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'm going to be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As many of our loyal listeners know, every once in a while we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers to give you an insight into both what goes into getting their projects made, as well as insight into the respective art itself. And for this episode, I am speaking with Flavio Alves, the director and one of the writers of the new film, The Garden Left Behind, which is available in virtual theatrical locations right now, but also on video on demand September 8th. So mark that on your calendar, September 8th. Carly Guevara stars as Tina. She's an undocumented trans woman living with her grandmother, Eliana, in Queens. Eliana has brought Tina to America from Mexico, and though she both sternly and affectionately still refers to her grandchild by her birth name of Antonio, Tina's relationship with her grandmother is one of unwavering love and devotion. It's one of my favorite parts of the film, which I'll explain in the interview. Tina's in the process of several major life decisions. She's struggling to juggle her shaky relationship with Jason, her job driving New York passengers to the next stop, and her burgeoning career as an activist following an assault on another trans woman. Tina's also confronting the very real possibility of gender reassignment. To fully become the person she knows she should be will take an enormous amount of support, which she has in her best friend, Carol. It's a scene-stealing Tamara Williams. I loved her in this. As well as a hefty amount of cash, which she has far less of. So the film revolves around Tina's journey, her entire journey, and it's equal parts sad and beautiful. The film also gives you an insight into the trans experience like few films have done, and I can't recommend that enough. So definitely check out The Garden Left Behind, video on demand, September 8th. Now, I first reviewed The Garden Left Behind, which you can find the review at our site, back in December of 2019. So it's been a while, because the film has been successfully playing at film festivals all around the world for quite a while now. It even won the Audience Award at South by Southwest, among many other accolades, last year. But now it's finally time for its release. So it's finally time for everybody else to see this movie that Flavio has been very excited about for the last year and a half. So Flavio sat down to discuss his career, how his service in the Brazilian Navy led to his book, Call to Silence, which then led to him seeking asylum in America. It's a very intriguing story all in itself. Then we discussed The Garden Left Behind, why he wanted to take on a film with such a pointed topic, casting his film with primarily trans actors, and him learning about their struggles and what their plight is really like, so he can inject that truth into his film. He also talks about his struggles getting the film into certain festivals, why they didn't want to, why they were a little hesitant about certain aspects of the film, and his absolute joy at this film's release. And I gotta tell you, since reviewing the film last year, I've been following Flavio on social media, and you know, I've talked to many, many directors over my years of doing this, and his absolute passion and joy and caring and love about this film and this topic is insanely infectious. This man has a great passion for this film and this topic, and I really hope you guys finally check it out when it's released on September 8th. I've explained what the movie was and a little bit of Flavio's journey, but I know you guys want to get into it. So without further ado, take a listen to my interview with the co-writer and director of The Garden Left Behind, which is available in select virtual cinemas right now and on video demand September 8th, Flavio Alves. Hey, it's Aaron Peterson with The Hollywood Outsider. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Wonderful.
Just so you know, I'm in Florida. I'm relaxing in Florida as opposed to New York. I have my office in New York, but I spend most of my time, especially when I'm not making films, I spend most of my time in Fort Lauderdale, you know, and that's what I hide, you know.
That's a good place to hide if you're going to hide. Right on the beach, I hope.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Flavio, we are talking about The Garden Left Behind, but before we get into the movie, I always open every interview with the same question. When did you know you wanted to get involved in filmmaking? Was there a specific moment for you?
You know, I became a filmmaker because I was attracted to the dream that I could make a difference in people's life, you know, and I was in politics for many years, you know, and I thought that was the way to go, you know, because if you want to make impact in people's life, being a politician would be something to consider, you know, but I went to college, you know, for political science, and then I took some classes in film. And that's when I discovered my passion for films, you know, and then I was in politics for a few years. Then I decided, you know something, let me try film. This is my passion. I think I can do better. And then, so here I am.
Here you are. That's a weird journey. That's not the typical, you know, usually yeah. it's some kids using a Super 8 in his backyard, and that's where you get inspired much yeah. later in life. That's pretty fantastic.
And by the way, it was the best thing that happened to me, because being in politics, there are so many parallels between working politics and working film. And it really helped me to understand more my place in film and in filmmaking. And it really helped me. I think I would advise anyone not to go to film school, but going to taking a few classes in political science at least, you know, and or doing a major. I don't know. But it really helps you to understand the world you live in.
Flavio, I think today, in today's world, most people should probably go to a politics class so they understand what's going
yeah.
on.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
You see a lot of that. You know, you've had quite a journey to Hollywood, not just by what you just said, but you were born in Brazil, and
yes.
you were granted political asylum in the U.S. in 98, I believe, because of your book, Call to Silence, for American listeners.
Yeah, Call of Silence, yeah.
And the threat, you received a lot of threats because of this book. So was that a really scary time for you?
You know, and it was when I came to America, it was actually pretty much, I got a call from someone that was right after I published the book, and saying like, the military tapped your phone, you know, and you are no longer safe in Brazil. So, and for me, I had to leave my country and to look for safety in someplace else, you know. So it was scary because I didn't know the language when I came to America now. And the first place I came was New York City. And then for the first time, I had to test the asylum option as a gay man, because at that point, I think I was one of the first cases to seek asylum based on sexual orientation. And then on the top of that, based on political opinion. So again, being a different country where you don't speak the language, you know, it was a challenge. But in terms of being scared in Brazil, yes, I was for my safety, you know, and but it was not my intention when I came to America to stay here for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I thought that eventually I would get back to Brazil and live a normal life, because, you know, I loved my country. You know?
Beautiful country. What about the book spawned that?
My book, well, the book was about my experience as a gay man in the military. Mm-hmm. It's more like my point of view, how I saw myself as a gay man, you know, serving in the military. I was open as a gay man, mm-hmm. but it was not as much as a gay rights type of book. And now it was just my experience as a gay man. At one point in my life when I was there, and now the Navy, they discharged me, you know. And then I was really mad because it had nothing to do with my ability to function, you know, to do my work, you know. And then I decided to write the book. But again, the book was my perspective as a gay man serving openly in the military.
Well, I admire you for doing it. I was in the Navy in the 90s, early 90s, and it was don't ask, don't tell was the policy here.
In Brazil, we had that too. We had this sort of don't ask, don't tell, and it was not in a law like we had in America, now, which was more like, okay, if you pretend that you are not gay, we pretend that we don't see it, you know, and that was pretty much the same way. And because I started coming out and being more open, and it was actually bothering them. But again, you know, being gay, I never thought actually that they would actually discharge me. I was in jail for one day, for one night, and then because the press, we had a lot of articles coming out, mm-hmm. you know, as a result of that, and they decided to release me, and then I was kind of lost, you know, because, you know, just like any poor kid in Brazil, and the military was actually the only option to escape from poverty, you know, and the Navy was very, very important to my life, mm-hmm. gave me so much. But I saw it, you know, it was also good. I was good for them as well. So it was never like one-way street, you know. Mm-hmm. I was a good soldier, and then I liked my job, and it paid my bills. When I was discharged, I was out of place. I didn't know what to do, you know. And again, it was unfair because it was based now on something that has nothing to do with my ability to do my job.
Our military was the same way, and it was shameful. You've had quite a story. But before we get into the film itself, you had a very unique approach to getting funding that I found out about. You went through eBay and donations and things like crowdfunding in that way. Can you kind of take us through that a little bit? That's fantastic.
Yeah, and actually, as a filmmaker, we have to reinvent ourselves, you know, and if you want to keep making movies, you know, and you have to understand that you have to find a way to survive, because this is a very expensive business, you know, and I always trying different things, you know, but the eBay thing actually came by accident, because after I finished one of my productions, and I had some few equipments that I had to get rid of, and I put on eBay, and I was surprised that in few like minutes I sold the equipment. And then I thought like, wow, that would be interesting. You know, maybe I could sell more stuff, you know, besides my equipment. Maybe I have, you know, I can get rid of so many things I had in my closet, you know. Then, you know. And then I thought like, wow, maybe actually I could fund my next film. But I hold it for a while, you know, because I thought like, okay, now I have to wait for when I do my next film. And then I started working on how I would do it through eBay. And the idea was very simple, and it works pretty much like any other crowdfunding, you know. Mm-hmm. So people donate stuff to us, and then we put those items on eBay ourselves, and then we ship to the buyers. You know, in the beginning, our goal was to raise $10,000, but we raised $10,000 like in a matter of I think it was about a week. We raised $10,000. Then we thought like, oh my God, let's raise our goal. Now our goal is $25,000. Then became $50,000. Then $100,000. And that was very simple. Now we asked people to donate stuff to us. Anything they had in their closets that was taking space, collecting dust, they donate to us. We put on eBay, and then the proceeds went to the film. And then the donors, they would get some perks. Let's say that you gave us like a old iPhone, a old pair of boots, like an old leather jacket or cat food or anything that you had that was you didn't want anymore. I know. And then we put on eBay. And let's say that all your items that you gave to us all together, we sold them. We raised, let's say, $500. Mm-hmm. And then you get perks. It could be anything. Could be depends on how much you give in terms of items. You could give like a credit on the film or special thanks on the film. But also could be something like a much bigger. Could be depends on how much you gave to us. It could be like you have a small part in the film.
That's great. Now,
or you have like a co-executive producer on the film. No, yeah, that's how we did it. And everything, by the way, was tax deductible. If you donate anything, not everything, but if your items all together, we were able to raise $250 or more through the New York Foundation for the Arts. That donation you gave to us, the goods became is tax deductible.
That's fantastic.
So it's good for the donor, and it's good for us. And now because we kept the proceeds, I mean the money, and we raised $104,000 on eBay in the space of 2.5 months.
See,
it was pretty good.
That's pretty amazing. And everybody that's listening that say, I can't get my movie made because I can't get the funding for it. Wrong.
Yes. Yes. And it was, again, it was very, very simple. I'm just saying one thing here. In the beginning, it sounds very complicated because you have to list the item on eBay,
right?
And it takes a little while to understand how to list the item, understand how the system works behind eBay, you know, and the rules, etc. But also you have to pack the item, you have to ship the item, and all those things, and also have to take photos of the items. You know, the more photos you have, the better. You know, so but once you learn all these techniques, it becomes now very natural, because you can do that very quickly. At any given time, we have over 1,000 items on eBay. And then you think like, where'd you get all those items? we start talking to people, and people spoke, talked to other people, to friends and the friends of friends, and we start getting boxes and boxes of stuff that the people gave to us. And the people start calling us, no stop. People call us and say, my father, my daddy passed away. I have a lot of stuff in my house. I don't know what to do with it. Or I have a lot of stuff in my closet. Can you come here and pick it up? So we had people with cars getting that stuff, you know, once a week, going everywhere in the city, and we did only New York City. Now, although we got things from outside the state, people ship it to us, but we had someone in the city going different places and getting stuff and bringing back to the office, and we had someone waiting to take photos, another one to describe the item, put on eBay, and then it was very, very simple, and then we raised now over $100,000 on eBay.
It's just crazy. Just crazy.
Well, yeah, and also, by the way, it could be for anything. It could be for eBay my wedding, eBay my college. Could be anything, you know. And it doesn't have to be. It's not restricted to a film. We used for film. Actually, we had the website. Anyone can go to our website and see how we did it. Called ebaymyfilm.com. Again,
great.
ebaymyfilm.com. You can go there and find and know all the details on how we did it.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, now we're at The Garden Left Behind. You made several films, but this one seems to be very special for you. I've seen the pride and the enthusiasm you seem to have whenever this film comes up on Facebook and everywhere else. You are excited.
Thank you.
Where did the story come from? Why did you want to make The Garden Left Behind initially?
Well, every time I start the film, I ask the same question to myself, you know, what kind of social impact am I expect from my films? You know? And there is so much social stigma and the misunderstanding surrounding the transgender issues that I thought that making The Garden Left Behind would be a perfect film for me to make. And you know, first, because I'm a gay man, I'm a Latino, so I do understand what it means to be an outsider. So I was glad that I was in a position to make that kind of impact, you know, not only by telling stories that reflect my experience, but also telling stories of people who don't often see themselves on the big screen. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think The Garden Left Behind was an important film. That's why I'm excited, because I like to work on films that makes me excited, you know. And I get up every day and I'm like, okay, let's see what I can do to make this film better. To get this film everywhere. Now, as you see on Facebook and Twitter, we are very aggressive, the whole, not just me, but my whole team. And because we have a lot of passion underneath. And now we work very hard to make sure that this film everyone gets to see this film.
Well, one thing I appreciate about the film was that it tells Tina's story from her point of view. I mean, it wasn't outsiders and what they see her doing. It's strictly from her point of view, her relationship struggles with Jason, her debate on gender reassignment, her need for support, you know, all very, very important issues. Was it important for you to get as close to the truth as possible instead of your typical Hollywood fare that just dances around it?
You know, for my side of defense as a gay man and Latino, I appreciate when I see a fair representation of my community. Mm-hmm. So for me, as a storyteller, it's important to get it straight, get it right. And the last thing I want while making a film was to misrepresent the trans community. No, first, it's not fair to the people who are trying to understand transgender people, but also it's not fair for the transgender community who are trying to get their stories told honestly and openly. You know, so. And the best part of making this film was that I was able to bring everyone to the table. And the result of this film was that we had over 50 trans men and trans women working with us in front and behind the camera. This was a different type of film to make, because it worked almost like a documentary, because we did a lot of research, we engaged the community, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and before we wrote the story, you know, so there are a lot of interviews, a lot of testimonies we collected for about a year. And John Rotondo and I, my co-writer, we want to make sure that we now have all the details, everything we see actually on the film. Actually, I think that we encountered things that we heard from the community. You know, so either you know the relationship with her the family, and now her grandma, with the boyfriend Jason, and now everything that you see in the film, the violence, everything. I think that we heard straight, you know, from the trans community, you know. So that's why it became authentic. That's why the film is connecting with people. But also, we did all that without being too much on the face, on the nose, you know. So anyone can actually connect or find something relatable in the film, you know, and you don't have to be trans or gay or you know, minority to understand her pain. Mm-hmm. So anyone can connect with her.
And what did you learn? Because you said you did all this research and you did interviews, and you are a gay man, but this is still a separate issue for you. So what do you what did you learn about trans men, trans women, their struggle, that maybe took you by surprise or you didn't expect when you were researching it?
You know, that's a good actually question, because every time I start the film, I think like I'm going to learn something, you know, because we actually, as a gay man, I assume that, oh, I know a lot about, you know, the trans community because, well, we are part of the same group, same family, you know, we are brothers and sisters. But it proved, by doing this research, it proved that I was once again wrong. And then I had a lot to learn. And then, it was an interesting experience because I started the story, the film, and now with an idea in mind, but it evolved over the year, now after I collect all those interviews, you know. So I had a bad idea now what it means to be a trans man, a trans woman, and how different those issues are from being a gay, you know. And it was a learning experience for me. But most importantly, by working with them doing these interviews, I challenged them and they challenged us, and not to make a better film. And that makes me really, really happy, because it was a learning experience for everyone, not just for myself as a gay man, but we have a lot of other crew members work with us who have never had the chance to work with us, members of the trans community. And we all learned so much by working with them, you know. And all those stories that we heard from trans community helped us to shape the story of our main character. And that makes me very proud.
Were the actors very, I mean, I have to imagine, because they're all most of them were trying to be actors in Hollywood, and it's very difficult for them. Were they excited to be represented and to be representing their own community?
We invite people who are happy to be part of the process of making this film, you know. And the process, casting process, was actually a challenge because it's different. We didn't follow the traditional way of casting actors for a film. So we actually engaged the trans community organizations and asked them to come and for auditions. So we get real people actually playing those parts, you know. And for us, it was a challenge because you are as a director working with actors without experience, but also because they are playing themselves, and it gave so much texture to the film. Mm. Again, it was a challenge for us, but working with them with the film gained so much by having them being as we had been as a part of the project. You know? I don't know if I make any sense. Does it make sense?
No. Yes. It makes sense. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. So you learned all this about the trans community, and Scarlett Johansson, you know, she had her issues because a straight actress was cast as a trans woman. Do you feel like that shouldn't be a thing? I mean, where do you stand on situations like that where actors are being cast as trans people and instead of trans men and women actually playing the roles themselves? Do you feel like it's just not fair or underrepresented?
Here's how, and I know that a lot of people disagree with me, but that's how I see it. I think an actor should be able to play any part. However, the problem that I see with trans people not be able to act is because they have not been given a chance, you know? And it's pretty much like if you see the old days with where white actors played African-American characters in films, you know, and it was unfair because the African Americans was never given an opportunity to act. And the problem with that is that if you can't see, you can't be it, you know? So we need more opportunities, you know? So I'm not against cis actors. I mean, cis men or cis women playing trans and actor roles. Mm-hmm. How, as long as also the studios give opportunities to trans actors to play as cis roles. And now, so in the film, actually, we have, most people don't notice that, but in this film, The Girl Left Behind, we actually have a trans man playing a cis man in the film, playing a person who's not trans in the film. Now, and there's a very small scene on the YouTube scene, the man who's interviewing the speech pathologist on the YouTube scene on the film. We have to give an opportunity to trans actors, but it doesn't mean that we should not allow cis people to play trans parts. And as long as they understand that we have to give opportunities to fair opportunity to trans actors, and we had over in this film 200 people who came to read Tina's part for the film. We cast our four or five actors who had lines on the film, and now we see them playing other films, like Tamara Williams was in Pose, and so many other actors who are playing parts in other films, you know. So I'm very glad that I'm opening the doors to actors to be able to play in other films, because now we no longer can, the studios can no longer say, well, I just can't cast them because I don't see them, I can't find them. So I am an independent filmmaker and I found them. There is no reason for them to say, no excuse for them to keep saying they can't find people. No, I want the studios and other films to, not just studios, but also independent filmmakers to give an opportunities to not just trans, but also Latinos and people of color, you know. And I think that's is a good way to go. But again, it doesn't mean that a cis person can't play now, because it makes no sense to me. Because if they, because I see a lot of trans people saying, like, I would love to play a, why don't you give an opportunity to us in your film to play a cis part in your film as well, not only trans. And then, okay, I think that's fair. But also, why should the trans community be upset with cis actors playing trans roles? You know? If we are giving opportunity to everyone, you know, I think it should go both ways. You know, and should, you know, not only trans actors should play, should be able to play trans cis roles, but also cis actors should be able to play trans roles in films.
You have Tina, who has several elements of her story to contend with. Not only is she a trans woman, but also an undocumented one. Like, what I find funny is either of those topics could be a movie all on their own and a compelling story all on their own. But you decided you decided to tack on the immigration status as well. What made you decide to bring that issue into your movie as well?
Well, we have to expand our thinking in terms of what certain characters could be, right? So I grew up in Brazil in the 70s, you know, in the 80s, and I'm watching American films that some of them had the, you know, Latino characters, you know, and so every time I saw a Latino character that was, could be a positive role model as Latino, and I was wondering how long it would take for him or for her to be killed. You know, and because in American films for a long time, that's what we played, you know, played gangsters, we played pimps. Yeah. And so when I became a filmmaker, one of the things that I want to do is like to make sure that we don't restrict ourselves to our small way of thinking, you know, and that we have to expand our visions, you know, and how other characters could, you know, could be. So I think it was a nice complication to have Tina as Latina, as opposed to a Black trans woman or white trans woman. Now, I think would be interesting because also while I was doing those, my research, I interviewed a bunch of Mexican trans women, and then I understood what they had to go through. You know, they now, because they are trans, you know, they have less access to unemployment, you know, healthcare, you know, housing. So it became another layer. They another hardship for them to overcome as undocumented immigrants. So I thought that by having Tina as a Mexican, it would be a nice complication to have, so people could understand more that angle as well as being undocumented. Yeah, that's what I tried to achieve with that.
Well, I absolutely adore the addition of Tina's grandmother Eliana, because she's presented in this way that is both, she's very stern, but also affectionate, and refers to Tina by her birth name of Antonio. But a lot of that is because it's her generation. You know, it's not coming across as she's doing it to be spiteful. It's her generation, and she still loves Antonio / Tina very much, is very unwavering in that devotion. And I like that so much, because it's so typical in roles like this where Eliana would be firmly committed one way or the other. What inspired you to craft grandma in this way, to be so open?
Yeah, I agree. And Tina's relationship with her grandmom is the backbone of the story. Now, and when I was actually writing the story, because I heard a lot of testimonies from people talking about family, you know, and their families. And I came to a point that I was like, well, I don't see that often in films, you know, and why films, they concentrate too much on the change, physical appearance or change. They forget that, you know, trans people, they also have families, you know. Also, was important because the journey that a parent goes through when a child is transitioning is often left out. So I thought it was important to have it in a film so people can actually connect with the character better, because my idea with this film, the story is to get the audience on her side quickly, you know, and so people can get to know her as a human, you know, because actually in the first 15 minutes, if you watch this film without reading the synopsis, you don't know she's a trans woman. Mm-hmm. You only learn about that she's transitioning, you only learn about her gender identity issues 10 minutes after now you start watching the film. At that point, you already actually fall in love with her, because we start the vacuum clean scene, everything pretty quick, right, in the first few minutes. And again, as a Latino, also, I thought it was important to have the family aspect, you know, in there, you know. Yeah, that makes the story. That's why actually people care more about her when we come. I don't want to talk about the ending of the film.
No,
but
don't do that.
I don't want to say that anything about the ending. But I think by humanizing her, I think people would care more about her, about the story, you know. And I think it would be easy for people to understand her specific needs and struggles if you start the way we did, you know. Yeah, I thought it was effective, you know.
She felt genuine, and that's very hard to do, because so many times in Hollywood movies, especially when they deal with gender issues, whoever the parent or grandparent is so firmly either so loving they're all in, or they're so against it they're all out. You know what I mean? When it comes to those issues, and it's nice to have somebody who's like a real person, where they don't understand, but they still love them and support them, but they don't understand certain things. And they come from a generation where they didn't understand certain how things have evolved in society. I really love that.
They also have they misunderstand each other, you know, and it was intentionally, you know, because I met actually families of trans people, and I realized that they actually, there are a lot of love, mm-hmm. now in most cases, there are a lot of misunderstanding. I don't think that Tina at that point never had that real conversation to her grandmom about her desires to embrace herself, her mm-hmm. identity. And but it was then we need another character, which in the film we had, now that helped the grandmom to understand what really matters is her happiness. You know, but that's why we had in the film, we had a character that actually talks to grandmom why Tina needs to go through the process, you know. And I think it was important because now at that point we know, okay, now the grandmom got it, right? But it was only in the end, because we see the arc in the film. In the end, we see that the grandmom finally calls her Tina as opposed to the dad name, you know. So we see the change in her character. Now, from the beginning toward the end, you see the change. But again, she always loved Tina. You know, they always loved each other. You can see that was clear in the film.
Absolutely. And you've talked about casting your movie, and Carly Guevara is great. Tamara Williams is fantastic. She's just such a scene stealer. But I can't not mention, Ed Asner's here, who's always a joy. And Michael Madsen, you know, if you know Michael Madsen, I think, you know, he's just one of those guys where people love. He's a great character actor. But he's kind of gotten stuck and pigeonholed in this tough guy niche for a long time. It was so nice to see him play something else for once.
Something else.
How did you end up with these two great guys?
Honestly, it was an organic thing. You know? And Michael and Ed, I think more Ed, because Ed, I worked with Ed, you know, Ed Asner before, you know, and he read the script and he called me and I'm like, I want to be in this film because this is an important story, you know, I want to be part of it. So I like when actors, you know, especially in his size, you know, and he has done so much, you know, and when they come and say, I want to work with you, I want to be part of it, it means a lot to me, you know. For Michael Madsen, and he read the script and then it was done through my casting director, you know. But he was very excited to be part of it. And I want to work with people who want to work with me, you know, and who also understand the story, you know, and who wants to lend their names or help. Because they work for peanuts, you know, that's the truth, right. You know. They work for very, it's not about the money. It's about being part of something that means something to them, you know. And that's how Michael and Ed saw the work on this film, you know. Also because they, by playing a small part, they don't take away, you know, the importance of, because it's not about them, you know.
Right.
They just play a small part, you know. They're just coming to support the film. I don't think that, although we had actors who tried to get the lead on the film, but from the very beginning, we knew that this is the film that should be played by trans actors. Again, not because I don't believe that actors could actually play those parts, but also because I want to give an opportunity to trans actors to shine, you know?
But having those guys, Ed Asner has different, he comes from a different generation, so you might get people who know him to check out the movie that way. Michael Madsen has this like tough guy persona. He's a wonderful actor, and he'll bring in a different, you know, so you'll get people, I think, to experience the movie that might not have given it another chance because they come from
different
worlds.
Yeah, that's true, because we, you know, for example, we want to make sure that you didn't have a overlapping actors, overlapping the same audience, you know. So we want to, you know, Ed Asner appeals to different demographic, different, you know, he came different, you know, he came from a time that, you know, it's different than Michael Madsen, you know, and they're also different, they have different types of audience, you know. Yeah, so I sometimes I send the film to, I go to festivals and people say, I came here because I came to see Ed Asner, I heard Ed Asner in this film. And the same thing that happens to, we went to other festivals that people, you know, told us, like, oh my God, I can't believe Michael Madsen played a part in this film. I can't, you know, I was so excited to come here to see him. Yeah, just like you said, you know, Michael Madsen usually plays the tough guy, you know, it's not something that he usually plays, you know, but we are very happy. Both of them were just like so good working with them on set. And even now they're helping to promote the film. If you see like Michael Madsen, both of Michael Madsen and Ed Asner, they're promoting the hell out of this film on the social media pages. I'm so happy to see that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I really hope this movie's success. You have been so enthusiastic and excited. And everybody that's been a part of it feels the same way. I mean, I feel like it's been rolling through festivals for a while, a year and a half, maybe?
Like a year and a half, yeah?
Yeah.
Year and a half. And we
insane.
Only stopped it, just so you know, because of COVID. Because actually I was in Europe, because we did the first tour, starting in the U.S., then for about a year, then we went, we started our tour in Europe. And then I had to cut it short because I had to return to the U.S. because of, you know, I was getting very messy with, you know, and I was afraid they would not allow me to get back to the country, to the U.S. So I was in Germany, actually. I was in Berlin. Yeah, it was, we had so many other screenings that scheduled to take place in Europe. We had to cancel all those screenings. And then, but I love traveling to festivals because this is a good way to engage audience. I love it. I worked for in a film for 4, 5, 6 years, you know, each film. So I need that to go. Going to festivals is just like an outlet, you know, and it's completely different from anything I do while making a film. So when I go to festivals, I forget about scripts or anything else. You know, I just like I go to have fun. Now I travel everywhere and to engage my audience, you know, and I visit places, and you know, I went to so many places that I would never go otherwise, but I go to those places because I got an invitation. I got invited to attend a screening, you know, so I love it.
That's awesome. I'm so happy for you. I'm kind of curious.
Okay.
I mean, your movie has a message, but it's not a message movie. It's a character piece. But what do you hope straight white males like myself take away from your film, as well as members of the LGBTQ community?
You know, there are a lot of hopes on making a film like that, you know, and we hope that it will travel and that people will respond to the film. I always hope that the people find something relatable in my characters. I hope that the next time, like you said, now my audience sees a trans person, you know, they see them as a humans. And finally, I hope that the film will help to reshape the landscape on how trans people are viewed, on how trans people are treated in America. And that's why we made this film, you know, and we all need to help and positively impact and shift the conversation. And I really hope that we achieved it with this film. And again, this film was not made for the trans community or the LGBTQ community. Now, this film was made to the mainstream. Mm-hmm. You know, and anyone watching this film can find something relatable, whether, for example, Tina trying to find financial stability, you know, I mean, anyone can connect with it. Tina trying to find the love. Now, anyone can connect with it, you know. So, you know, we're trying to make a film that, again, connects with everyone and presents the cat as a human. And being trans is not everything she is, you know? And she's Latina. She's a best friend. She's a granddaughter. Now, there are so much about this film that is very unique. And so I'm so happy when I go travel to different places in the country, you know, in the heartland of America. Like, we went to Bentonville, Arkansas. Oh. And we have two screenings, sold out screenings in Bentonville.
Fantastic.
In Arkansas. And two sold out screenings, and mostly white, elderly, you know, people. I was so glad to have them as my audience, because, and some of them came to talk to me after the screening, and some of them crying, you know, because this film is a very touching film, you know, and so some of them crying and telling me like how much they love the film, you know, and it's also, you have something interesting, and sometimes comes from people that you don't expect, you know. I saw actually people coming to me and say, my granddaughter, she's a trans, or grandson is a, and so I came here because I heard about this film. I want to understand more about, you know, them, you know, my granddaughter, son, you know. So it was so touching, you know. And again, it was, the audience was not, here and there we have like a trans person audience, but mostly, you know, sees white heterosexual men, women, on the audience watching the film, and people need to walk out, and people just stay there and watch the film throughout the end, you know. That's great. It's beautiful. It means like we are, you know, achieving our goal, which is trying to reshape on how people sees trans people, and also giving opportunity to people to know trans people, and without being a threat to them, you know.
And the immigrant experience too, because that's an important part of your story too, and you get some points to that across as well.
Yeah, and there are a lot of stuff about this film. You know, I would try to check as many boxes as possible. You know, and we have police brutality. We had trans issues. We have immigration issues. We have DACA, you know, because she came when she was 5 years of age. So we had lots of stuff going on in that film. You know, but some of them are very light, and some of them are more like forefront, like immigration or trans issues. But we tried to cover a lot of things on this film. You know, and but some of them, as I said, are very subtle. You know.
Well, I'm so happy for you. Are you excited now that it's finally going to be unleashed on the world?
No, I can't believe that it's happening, you know, because I waited for this moment for so long, you know. I have been working this film for 6 years, you know. I feel like when you have a kid, you know, that you raise your kid and you send it to college. And that's how I feel about it. And at that point on, you don't have control anymore. Your kids go to college and then they their lives from that point on, you know? And now we are I'm ready to move to my next film. So so I'm sad that I have to let it go and to move to something totally different, you know, because every film I make, it's about a different and a different community, you know, it's about a different marginalized community, you know. So I'm finishing this one. I'm glad that I finished it, and now it's gonna meet. It's gonna be in theaters. It's gonna be on VOD, so anyone can watch the film. But I'm ready now also to move to my next, project. You know? So in life is just like that. You know? So I take the most out of it. You know, I love the idea that now I'm ready to move on. You know, and to the next project. You know, and yeah.
Do you have any idea what your next one's going to be?
Well, the next project's going to be about an aging community, you know. So I really like work with the elderly community, you know. But we are doing research right now, and I can't talk much about it. But yeah, it's going to be about aging issues.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully you can come back for that one as well.
No, thank you. Thank you. One last thing I would like to say that I forgot to mention is that actually, I think it's important as well, is that we also found some resistance and in the festivals, you know, with this film, with The Garden Left Behind. You know, it's interesting enough because it came from the LGBTQ film festivals, you know. So, but I am glad that at the end, you know, it all worked out. But just so you know, in the beginning of most of them rejected the film. And then, so I'm glad that we pushed the trans community to take an action. In the end, they have to reverse the decision. Some of those festivals, like a Frameline in San Francisco and also Inside Out in Canada, and they took the film. Now, so it was for us very important because, again, we talk a lot, as you know, about the violence that affects the trans community, especially for trans women of color. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad that in the end, the LGBTQ film festivals embraced the film the way they did, you know. So again, it was not just like the film playing a lot of festivals, but also it was very important for us to be able to play major LGBT film festivals. And so I'm glad that they reversed that decision, which was last year, and they took the film under their umbrella.
That's crazy. Why would they not take it? I mean, it seems right up their alley.
Yeah, right. So it's something that's really strange that happened because their argument was that they need more uplifting stories. Ah. So as a cis man, because I'm not a trans person, as a cis man, they thought that it was another film about with a cis man as a director or producer making a film about a death, about violence, you know.
Gotcha.
And then that for that reason they rejected the film. Keep in mind that the film has just at that point not only played at South by Southwest, but we won the audience award at South by Southwest. So for us it was very, very strange when right after that we got rejected by Frameline and Inside Out. For the trans community that we interviewed, and they were very surprised, you know, and the members of the trans community, they were very surprised because violence is part of their experience, you know, is the sad reality of their lives, you know, and for them not to be, for them to, for the film to be rejected based on the fact that it's not a uplifting film, but it's a sad film, and one, you know, it's their reality. For them, it was a slap on the face. They felt like that's not fair, you know. So again, for a trans white woman living in LA, and they have a different reality as opposed to someone who happened to be a trans woman of color living in the Bronx, because the film takes place in the Bronx in New York.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then for them, it was just like, now what do you mean? You are erasing our stories, you know. I think Frameline got, you know, over 100 emails and letters and people knocking their doors, calling them and asking them to take the film. And at the end they did, you know. But we also have to understand why they did it, you know, why they they rejected the film, you know, initially, you know. And then and they said, because they are trying to change the narrative, you know, they need more uplifting stories, you know. So, but here's the thing. I don't think I should be directing this film if I could not honor the material I had. Most of the people who I spoke with, trans women of color, mentioned, most 8% of those interviews, they mentioned violence, either physical, verbal, or emotional. I don't think I should be directing this film if I could not honor those interviews, you know. And then for me, it was very strange when they rejected the film, because now I think the film was an important story, and we should be talking about the violence, because that's the reality, you know. And but I, of course, I knew as a director that it would spark emotional response. I knew that.
Yeah.
No, I knew. But I never thought that the festival would actually reject the some LGBT films. Now, I just mentioned two, but there are so many others who rejected the film based on that. Now, and that I was shocked. And also the trans community as well. And that's why they mobilized themselves. They made lots of calls and emails and, you know, wrote letters, you know, and family members, you know, and people who lost loved ones, you know. And at the end, we became the first film to reverse the decision by major festivals, and they were forced to take it back. Was it a little strange, you know, for them to, like, okay, we officially accept the Gala Behind, you know, like, what, you know, have they rejected the film? But also was a victory, not for the film, which was a victory to the trans community, especially again the trans woman of color who has, you know, faced different experience, and those stories should not be erased. They're important stories, and we should keep talking, especially now, because we are on the track this year, 2020, to be the most violent year for the trans community. You know, there are more deaths this year than any, and recorded this year than any other previous year. So it is strange that people are trying to erase those voices or to silence those voices. You know, that's why I think it was, at the end, it was a victory for every member of the trans community, because we have to keep talking about the violence. That's how I see it, you know. And and sometimes the best way to make change is by
showing the uncomfortable
shining
truth.
Shining a light, so we can be more effective, you know. And that's how I see it. Anyway, so I'm glad that we are where we are, and I'm glad that the film now is going to be, as you said, it's going to be everywhere to people to see it, you know, so I'm glad.
Well, congratulations. Thank you so much for coming by and doing this. And The Garden Left Behind will be in theaters soon, limited theaters, and video on demand in September. So, I mean, this is great. Congratulations, man.
Yes. Thank you so much. So, again, it's August 28th. It's going to be on VOD in LA, New York, and a bunch of other places across the country. But on September 8th, it's going to be on VOD, Amazon, iTunes, mm-hmm. and much more, you know. So please come to see the film, you know. You're going to love it.
All right. Well, thanks for coming by, Flavio. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
There you go, guys. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I thought it was very insightful. There's a lot of topics we broached during that. But I think you can see and hear the infectious enjoyment that Flavio has about this film getting released, the same passion that I've seen for the last year. I want nothing but the best for him and everyone involved with the film. I think everybody put their heart and soul into it. Please check out The Garden Left Behind on video on demand September 8th. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema whenever we can. So I really hope you enjoyed this one. Remember to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever your favorite podcast app is. Our normal show has a new episode every week and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. As always, this is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into a virtual theater or sit comfortably on your couch and watch The Garden Left Behind, buy popcorn.